Welcome in. It's the final Going Low of the Year Tour Championship Edition. Maybe there will be time for a special Ryder Cup Going Low. Squeeze that into the programming calendar in about a month's time when Team USA tries to defend its turf at Bethpage Black against the much more seasoned, much more well-organized, and frankly, much less tumultuous European team. We will get to that later in the show, though. I'm saying all that stuff for a reason, because today's agenda does include trying to put together the best 12. Really, it's the best 6. We already know 6 are auto qualifiers. It's trying to fill out the back half of a U.S. Ryder Cup team that has been in semi-disarray as far as how it's going to be constructed because of one particular variable that Team USA kind of an obstacle, a potential roadblock it put in its own way that has, lo and behold, come back to materialize. That's later. First, though, speaking of those Europeans, one of them in particular, stop me, my friends, on a Saturday morning, a morning that I hope leads to a day that involves you golfing. I will be out at an event later today at Hannahstown. Very excited for that. With Jeff Hathorn, by the way, whose name you just heard there, and given the timing of things, I hope Jeff either has a backup for the leadoff show, or Jeff is maybe doing it remotely or something, I hope. Very hopeful there. Hope Joel Nelson was getting some bad intel there, maybe. We start in a place we've started before, my friends. Stop me if you've heard this one before. It's a big tournament, small field, all good players, and who is sitting at the top of the board at the Tour Championship after two rounds? None other than Tommy Fleetwood. Let's give the man a hand. Yes, Tommy Fleetwood still hasn't won on American soil. 7 DP World Tour wins. He's won in Kazakhstan. Hasn't won here. He's tied at 13 under, along with Russ Henley, who is, in case you haven't been paying ultra-close attention to the golf world this year, if you're more of a, I'll tune into most of the tournaments on maybe Saturday, definitely Sunday, and that's it. Russell Henley's been the fourth best player in America this year by Ryder Cup points. He's on the team, baby. Russell Henley is not, he's not competing against anybody for anything. He's in. Tommy Fleetwood's the story, though. I think we all are drawn in sports to the story of the fairly likable person Fleetwood is, very likable actually, who for whatever reason cannot get over the hump. It's hard to call a guy who's one of, I'm being conservative here, probably one of the 8 best players in the world. I'll be maybe more conservative, I'll say 10 best. It's hard to call a guy who's one of the 10 best players on the planet an underdog. But my goodness, when Tommy Fleetwood gets into contention, he sure feels like one. It absolutely feels like Tommy Fleetwood is, the second you see T1 or 1 next to his name, you shudder, cold sweat goes through you, and you wonder, oh, could he finally pull it off? Probably not, but we'll see. Maybe. He has been golf's most snake-bitten player for a while when it comes to U.S. tournaments. This year, it has been especially brutal. Final round 72 at the Travelers, right after he missed the cut at the U.S. Open. He just essentially handed that tournament to Keegan Bradley. He literally did on the 18th hole when he fired a putt so poor that it forced him to putt again right on Bradley's line. He missed. Bradley made it. Good night, nurse. That's it. Since then, he's gotten a T4 at the BMW, T3 at St. Jude at Southwinds during the playoffs here. He blew the St. Jude championship basically in similar fashion. Two other guys, J.J. Spaun and Justin Rose, ran him down and passed him, and he choked, to put it in most honest terms, on the 16th hole there. And so we sit here at East Lake in Atlanta, and he's two clear of the field, he and Henley. He is five clear of the boogeyman, Scottie Scheffler, who's just lurking back there at eight under par. And I know Joel Nelson on the other side this morning is an avid, some would say, smiling, happy, degenerate sports bettor. I'm going to take a little peek right now. I'm going to peruse and tell you what the odds are right now that Tommy Fleetwood actually wins this golf tournament. Because I feel like they're going to make people laugh. I feel like you actually probably have to wager, probably are getting better odds on Scotty to win. Here's what we got. This is funny to me. Tommy is the betting favorite right now, plus 220. Henley, who's tied with him and who I think is a very proper golfer. I'm a big Russ Henley fan. Plus 240. This is more a commentary on where Scottie Scheffler is in the minds of the odds makers than it is anything. Scottie is five back in this tournament right now. He is plus 500. He is the third betting favorite. This is what is crazy. If Scottie starts out today, and he barely kept alive a streak yesterday of rounds in the 60s. He's at 19. I think Patrick Cantlay holds the record at 21. Scottie had to keep that alive with a clutch birdie on the last hole. He did not play well yesterday. He shot one under par. It was a very underwhelming performance for him. If he gets to within, let's just say Scotty birdies his first, two of his first four, by that point, Fleetwood will be on the course. If Scotty gets to 10 and Fleetwood like pars the first hole at East Lake, guess what? Scotty will probably damn near become the betting favorite. A commentary on how great he is and a commentary on how little trust Fleetwood engenders from the people who make these odds because they've seen it all before. At this point, Fleetwood's also so classy when he doesn't get it done, which is every time on U.S. soil. He's so classy that you like probably don't feel quite as bad as you maybe otherwise would because he just seems to, he's bothered by it, obviously, but he seems to be so genuinely good about it and have such good perspective on eventually, hey, I'll break through. I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to get this done. It doesn't make me feel like it's, I don't feel as bad as I feel like I probably should for almost rolling my eyes at the entire process. He's so unbelievably gracious in defeat. And he never gives you that window of, I just don't know what's going to happen for me. My goodness, when will it be my turn? That I probably should feel worse and I don't. I will say this. Nothing he's done is going to make me think that that this is the time he closes the deal. Nothing he's done this year. I don't get like some, in the aggregate, like, oh, Tommy's growing from his mistakes. He's not. That's the problem. There hasn't been a linear progression here, which is the other sort of wild thing. The dude is probably one of the three to five, I would say, when he's right, best iron players on earth. Scheffler's the best everything, basically, now at this point. He is the alpha, the omega. He's the closest thing we've seen since Woods. More on him a little bit later. Colin Morikawa, despite, you might as well give Colin Morikawa like a hockey stick and let him putt. He's been that bad on the greens. He's still like the third best iron player by stats in the world this year. Tommy's probably up there. Very proper golfer. Doesn't hit it a ton off the tee. Hits it plenty far though. But really then is like crisp and sharp with the irons. You'd look at his game. You'd say like many players, if his putter gets going, he can win against anybody at any time. And yet, the way in which these tournaments have gone down for him, the way in which he has lost tournaments this year that he's been either second or third in, does not give me any confidence that he is learning and growing from mistakes, that there is, like I said, this linear progression for Tommy Fleetwood. Go back to the Travelers. He's in the fairway. He had just hit a ridiculous shot on 17. He gets to 18. He's in really good position. Great iron player. I think he had about a buck 40 in the fairway, I believe, if memory serves. I don't think he was in like even the first cut. Yanks it. Hits a horrible shot. by his standards. Like a legitimately awful shot. Three jacks. Keegan Bradley wins. You get to St. Jude. He makes an absolute mess of the 16th hole. Like a hole that is, for him, on that day, all you got to do if you're Tommy Fleetwood is what? Birdie that hole. It's a par five. Just make the birdie. Can't do it. Barely gets it down for par. Makes a mess of it. You'd think for an iron player, you don't hit the ball off the planet, off the tee there. You have a pretty easy process to make birdie. Can't do it. You hate saying this because I think like this always sounds meaner than it's intended to sound. I don't know if he's got the intestinal fortitude to close the show for some reason. But even as I say that, he's done it a bunch of times against other strong fields in Europe. There is clearly something about him playing in this country that bothers him. It's like the Penguins going 0 for the 80s against the Flyers in Philadelphia. Every venue apparently for Tommy Fleetwood put a Penguins jersey on him. Every venue is the Spectrum. This guy can't do it. And it's like the last major story of this year before the Ryder Cup is this guy going to play 36 really good holes? Is he going to get... Eastlake was gettable in round one, mainly because it was so soft from the rain. They were playing lift clean in place. I imagine the course is going to show more teeth the rest of the weekend here. I didn't check the forecast in Atlanta, but I assume that it's going to dry out a good bit and that's going to play tough. I mean, you saw it reflected in yesterday's scores to some degree. By the way, yes, my allergies are flaring, if you are all wondering. No, I am not going into the bathroom and engaging in recreational drug use before the show. I forgot to take my allergy pill this morning, so that's why you're going to get the sniffles all day. I think the course is going to defend itself a little bit better on the weekend here, but he probably still has to get near 20 under. Guys took advantage day one. Guys took advantage for the most part day two. You see where they're at. It's 13 under, two clear, but there's a bunch of guys at 10. There's some guys at 8. He's not going to be able to basically, and he's got a guy in Russ Henley who's right there with him. He's going to have to still shoot probably a pair of 67s, I would say, would put me in a place where I thought, okay, he gets to 19 under. That's pretty damn good. That's going to be hard to beat. The one thing I wonder about with Fleetwood for this tournament is also this. Could it be easier for him? He's not the solo leader here. Remember, he was running away from the field, and then the field came back and caught him at TPC Southwinds at the FedEx at the St. Jude. The field reeled him back in very quickly. At the BMW, field reeled Big Bob back in. That was Scotty, but like the Peloton caught everybody. I do wonder that because it's tighter, I'm wondering if in this particular instance, it's going to be a little bit easier for Fleetwood mentally because there's a guy there with him in Henley. So Fleetwood's the betting favorite, but by like the narrowest of margins, he can just go out and play golf. I think in his case, he almost needs to be in the situation where he is trying to run somebody down on a Sunday or playing shot for shot with somebody rather than having the lead. Clearly, having the lead, not exactly what Tommy Fleetwood wants. By the way, he is going to be a lock. He is already, obviously, a lock for the European Ryder Cup team. Mathematically, he's one of their top six. Saying all this about him in stroke play, medal play tournaments in the United States to say that it is a stone-cold guarantee that Tommy Fleetwood, in front of an extremely hostile crowd of oiled-up, lubricated, blue-collar Long Island types, you know, the Lou's of the world, you know, the Jimmies of the world, he will go, 4-1 or whatever? He'll play every session at the Ryder Cup and basically be nails for Europe, and they'll probably win. Just saying all this to say that when you actually put him in a team setting, he's going to turn into the Terminator in a month. Has nothing to do with what happens the rest of the way at Eastlake, but he'll terminate. He'll be unbelievable. He'll hit shots that he's not capable of hitting in a stroke play tournament in the United States once he's at Bethpage putting on Team Europe colors. Up next, final edition of Going Low of the Year. We got through our usual Tommy Fleetwood discussion, which has become almost rote because it's happened so much. Let's talk about the guy and try to put into context what we're actually watching. The guy who is right now sitting in sixth place in this tournament. A man who is inspiring comparisons that I think most people thought they'd probably never make to a guy named Tiger Woods. I want to try to properly contextualize, properly explain just how good Scottie Scheffler's been this year and whether or not it's blasphemous to actually compare him to Tiger Woods. That's coming up next. It is Going Low on 93.7 The Fan. And it is the final Going Low show of the year. Chris Muller here. Hope you're playing today. Should be a nice day and really weekend for golf. So hopefully you are already booked somewhere, playing perhaps a little four ball, maybe a little alternate shot, or perhaps a singles match. Wait, that's for later in the show when we talk Ryder Cup. Right now, it's Scottie Scheffler time. Gather round, children. Gather round. It is, generally speaking, verboten to try and comp anybody post-Tiger Woods to Tiger Woods. The level of dominance that Tiger Woods exerted over the golf world in the really 2000, I would say the 08 run. You say you can really start it in 2000. When he went from like, yeah, he's won the 97 Masters, and yes, he's won other, you know, another major, to, oh my God, this guy's just going to keep winning all of these every single year. He's going to be the betting favorite by a landslide in every one of these that he enters. His win rate's going to be something like, you know, 50% at times for little runs of play, where if he enters, it's a coin flip as to whether he wins or not. He was so good that it became Tiger or the field. It does feel like we are not rapidly approaching that territory, and Scottie's never going to make it look on the course like Tiger did, because he does not really, frankly, have the emotion or the, what would the kids say? Maybe some of the riz, the golf course riz that Tiger had. Tiger would fist pump. Tiger would let you know he was jacked up, and then he would go and go full assassin mode when it actually came time to hit the shot or hit the putt and just do it. Scottie, other than like yesterday, looked pretty ticked off, frankly, slamming his club in a bunker. Scottie ho-hums his way around. It's just, that's his demeanor. He is probably he's definitely the best ball striker we have seen since Tiger Woods. He's the best iron player we've seen since Woods. Woods, later in his career, started to fight the driver off the tee a lot more than he had in the past, and I think that was part of the reason he only won one major in that 11-year run between the 2008 U.S. Open and the 2019 Masters. We know he battled injuries, personal issues, all sorts of stuff. In Scottie's case, he really has already eliminated the weakness that he had in his game. His swing, for all I can tell, while it is unusual and unorthodox at the bottom with his feet moving like they do, does not have what might become a fatal flaw for his body like Tiger Woods posting up on his left knee and torquing his left knee was for him. Tiger's swing that he made that involves so much strain on his left knee was eventually going to make that left knee kind of explode, and it did. It hurt his back, etc. Scottie really hasn't had any major health issues. And like I said, he already got rid of the one thing that was maybe holding him back, which was a weak putter. Since Scottie switched to a mallet putter, I think he did that last year. It's like maybe been a 40-tournament run. He's almost won half the tournaments he's played in. I saw this stat. He went from a blade to a mallet, and has damn near won half the tournaments he's entered with a mallet. That should be terrifying. That should be like the wake-up call thing. That should be the thing about Scottie Scheffler that makes you go, huh, wait a minute, maybe this guy is going to be this good. This is his run of finishes. Tell me this doesn't sound like Tiger. And by the way, I will say this. I think Scottie's doing it against deeper, better fields. I am aware that LIV has cleaved off Bryson specifically. Brooks and DJ, especially DJ doesn't care anymore. Brooks had his run at the U.S. Open, but he has shown horrible form. Everyone likes to tell me how great Joaquin Niemann is. Yeah, I don't care. He finally top 10 in a major. Congratulations to Joaquin Niemann. Other than Bryson being out of the picture and Rahm, there are not any other major, major, major forces that would otherwise potentially get in Scheffler's way for a lot of these finishes he's had. Oh, and by the way, Rahm wilted when he had a chance to actually run down Scheffler and was doing it at the PGA. Then he immediately started pumping water balls out there because Scotty never blinked. And Bryson, I mean, for all his greatness on a, you know, in a vacuum, you can get him in any given tournament and he can look like the best golfer in the world. I mean, Bryson ejected at the U.S. Open and couldn't beat Scotty in anything else. Like, Bryson's great. He ain't Scotty. Listen to this run of finishes. Scheffler has the wine stem go, the wine glass stem go through his hand, go into his hand, messes him up early in the year, right? Think of these two things that have happened to Scotty. The wine glass and Officer, what was his name? What was the guy's name last year? It was very funny. He got pulled over. It's a officer who shares a last name, I feel like, with an athlete, and that is why it's driving me crazy. Nelly, you got this?
Detective Brian Gillis, does that sound about right?
It wasn't an athlete. It was Shane Gillis is what I was thinking. Yes. Other than Detective Gillis and those $80 pants getting ruined in one of the most farcical situations I've ever seen happen to any athlete, he probably wins the PGA without that happening. He still was in serious contention. You can make an easy case that he wins the Masters if he's not fighting to make sure he's got his form again after the wine glass situation. Here are Scotty Scheffler's finishes. I'm just going to divide the year into two pieces. We'll call the first piece wine glass recovery. T9, T25, T3, T11, T20, T2, 4, T8. That takes you just past the Masters and through the RBC Heritage, okay? There are still five top 10s in this recovery period. He played in nine tournaments. He top 10 five of them, just to put into perspective the insane standard he set. Here is Scotty since the Heritage. So this starts basically from the start of May onward. First, T4, first, T7, T6, T8, first, T3, first. If you're scoring at home, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wins. He hasn't been outside the top 10 since the Players, which happened right around the time I turned 40 in mid-March. He has 5 or more wins in consecutive seasons. I think he is now the first guy since Woods to do it. Woods did it a bunch of times. That should put into context how great Tiger was. He is starting to approach this level. Scotty's 2024 by Data Golf Rankings is one of the best seasons ever. I think there are 3 Tiger seasons above it. Scotty in 2025 is starting to inch closer to that territory too. I'm not saying he inspires the same fear factor where guys seem to like wet themselves on the course when Tiger would be in the hunt. It maybe isn't that overt, or the TV coverage of it doesn't make it seem that way. The roars aren't quite the same. He's not fist pumping and stomping his way around the course like Tiger did. But make no mistake, you are seeing the best since Woods, and it is relevant insofar as, you know, comparing the two to say this on top of that. Tiger had a bunch of things go very badly for him that finally caught up to him is maybe the way to really say it, in his early 30s. He was, from age 21 to age 32, a force of nature who just by the math could be counted upon to win one major a year on average. From the 97 Masters to the 08 U.S. Open. He then went 11 full seasons without winning a major. You'll remember when he kind of made his comeback in golf and okay, I'm sorry, I did my apology tour, I'm going to be a better person. He would win tournaments. He even, I think, got back to like number one in the world pretty easily. He would occasionally win big tournaments, just not majors. He didn't win a single major for 11 years. And then he had the lightning bolt finish at the Masters that, you know, kind of closed the loop for him. And he became sort of this Not that he wasn't always ultra popular. He, of course, was. But he almost became this, like, sympathetic figure. I seriously doubt Scottie Scheffler, based on what we know about Scottie Scheffler, the person who's, like, boring dad mode when he's not golfing, is going to have the stretch in his 30s and early 40s that Tiger did. Something tells me that if Scottie, who has four majors right now, that if Scottie Scheffler, I don't know, gets to 32 and has won two more majors by then, wholly plausible for the record, absolutely plausible that Scottie Scheffler would have that like level of performance, that you can probably rely on him to stack, I don't know, at least three or four more, maybe five. Like, people are, what happens with these kind of comps that you make, right, is that people say, well, it's really hard to win majors in golf. And it is. It's really hard to do this. You can't overcount the guy. You're going to end up looking foolish when he doesn't come near the number. I think FanDuel and some of these other betting houses have him set at 9.5 right now. I'd take the over. Every time he enters the Masters, he should be considered the favorite until further notice. Every single time. He's won two of them already. Right? He wins a PGA and the Open this year. Remember, the Open was supposed to be the one. Oh, can Scottie, he hits it so high, can he go over there and play? Well, he got himself docile conditions at Royal Portrush this year and blew everybody away. He got a brief challenge at the PGA at kind of a beefed up PGA tour stop in Quail Hollow, a bomber's paradise, and beat everybody's brains in there after they made a brief charge and push. And he's close at the U.S. Open every time. It's not like the, you know, people say, oh, well, Scottie doesn't like it when a course becomes quote-unquote unfair. I don't know. He seems to be doing fine at the U.S. Opens. Go look at his order of finishes there. Four majors. The Masters should be a turkey shoot for him every year. It should be just a, is somebody going to happen to go lower than him? He should be a guy that top tens at the Masters damn near every year for the next 10. He's still in his late 20s. You're never going to have a cultural phenomenon like Tiger Woods again in the game of golf, but you are absolutely looking in Scottie Scheffler, I think, in the person of Scottie Scheffler, at somebody who's going to become pretty damn close. I would feel very confident right now, and that's why I'll say it. I think you're looking at a top five all-time golfer when it's all said and done. If your top five is some combination of Nicklaus, Woods as your top two, if you're going to go old school guys and say like Walter Hagen, fine. Tom Watson, maybe. You want to go with Arnold Palmer because of the impact on the game. Scottie's going to nudge his way in there. And I would say he's going to hit double-digit majors. And it probably felt inconceivable to suggest that about somebody until pretty recently. I think for him, it feels like almost the floor is 9 or 10. And yes, I'm the guy who said Brooks Koepka was going to win a million of them. I didn't recognize that Brooks would get hurt a lot and that Brooks would apparently stop really caring that much. My mistake. I don't think Scottie Scheffler is going to stop caring, and I don't think he has a swing that's going to get him hurt. Coming up, speaking of Scheffler, he's on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Duh. He's got triple the Ryder Cup points of second place. He's got more Ryder Cup points than third, fourth, and fifth combined, I believe. That's how good he's been this year. Let's try to fill out six more guys from the auto qualifiers and try to hold serve in this thing, because I'll be honest, right now, I don't have the greatest feeling about the U.S.'s ability to win at Bethpage. We'll make a little Ryder Cup team. We'll get you ready for the Panther Insider Show with Pat Bostic at 8 o'clock. It is Chris Muller going low on 93.7 The Fan. It's going to be really nice out today. It's going to be like 83. Should be pretty much sunny all day. Maybe a small chance of rain tomorrow. But that's probably overnight. It'll sprinkle the course. Firm and fast. Where you're playing today, chances are it's going to be firm and it's going to be fast, because apparently it doesn't rain here anymore other than like one day out of every 10. That is Fan Weather, brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. It is going low. It's Malzy. We talked about two players who have been talked about a lot on going low this year. Tommy Fleetwood, because he can't win. Scottie Scheffler, because all he does is win. So now we turn to team golf, where both of those men will be present, because They are both automatic qualifiers for the Ryder Cup. I'm not going to pick Team Europe. They don't need my help. They don't need my input. That team figures it out every year. I know that the Ryder Cup basically can be boiled down to pretty simplest terms. The home team tends to win. Europe comes up with these great course setups. Europe also used to be the team where the whole was greater than the sum of the parts, but now the sum of the parts is pretty damn good and might be better than the U.S.'s. In fact, it probably is. But the U.S. probably still relying on, we'll roll the ball out in front of an exceptionally rowdy, bordering on hostile crowd and bomb away and then win. There's all sorts of course setup things at Bethpage Black that you could talk about, but I'm not going to get into that level of nitty-gritty granular theory here. Although Nelly, as I'm seeing him, he's jotting down his betting odds and his lines. Nelly would like me to do that. Here is how the Ryder Cup team works. For those of you who might be somehow both in this Venn diagram, listening to a going low golf show like this, but not aware of how it's picked. 6 automatic points qualifiers and then captain's picks to fill out the back half of the team. Here's who is already going to be representing the U.S. Number one in the points, Scottie Scheffler. Woo, big surprise. He's got like 37,000. Nobody else has more than, I think, 14. J.J. Spahn, who's having a hell of a year, is number two on this list. All 6 of these guys, by the way, are automatically qualified. Xander Schauffele is number 3. He has not had a great year, but he has still had a good enough year to be that high up. Russell Henley, you'll find him currently playing in the last group at the Tour Championship this week, is 4th. The Flusher. I've warned everybody about this guy, Harris English, baby. He has been one of my picks. The man can hit the dang golf ball. He's 5th. And then Bryson is 6th. They're all locked in. The European team has 5 of those 6 spots locked. Shane Lowry right now would be in position to be the 6th, just respectively. All right, so you got Scottie Spahn, Schauffele, Henley, English, and DeChambeau. Bryson obviously being like the black sheep here as the live guy involved. I like Scottie a lot in this situation. I like pairing him with Henley because Russell Henley is like a perfect... Some of this is about complimenting who plays well with who. You know, does somebody's golf ball match up with somebody else's golf ball? I like them as a match. I'm a big Harris English fan. I think the guy's just really good. Schauffele is seemingly playing some of his better golf lately. J.J. Spahn has been one of the best stories in the year in golf. Has continued to be great and isn't just a U.S. Open flash in the pan. Has regularly contended after the U.S. Open. Almost obviously won the first playoff event at St. Jude. Had one of the more entertaining playoffs you'll ever see against Justin Rose. So no issues for me with the top 6. And Bryson's a goofball, but he can really play. Here is where it gets hairy. I think the conventional wisdom is that the following 2 guys are locks for 7 and 8. Justin Thomas and Ben Griffin. Conventional wisdom and Mulsey wisdom, they match here. I got no problems with that. Justin Thomas has largely played a lot better of late this year in general. I think he's been pretty solid. He's just outside the top 6 in points. He's basically the emotional heart and soul of that team when they get together. He's the guy who's trying to fire people up. You're that close to the top in points, and you're already that important on a intangible level, you're on the team. Ben Griffin has been, in the words of Pat McAfee, a dog this year. I have enjoyed immensely the Ben Griffin story. He won twice, won the team event in New Orleans, then won again, then really did not do a horrible job against Scottie in the final round of the Memorial. I did not think like Ben Griffin went out there and got humiliated. He just ran out of steam. He pushed Scottie. He tried to make putts. He tried to go toe-to-toe with him, and I didn't think he did a horrible job of it. He was just going against the best player we've seen since Tiger Woods' heyday. Basically, if you say that Scottie is the best player since roughly 2008 Tiger, then you're talking about the best player in a generation because it's been almost 20 years. We're all getting old. The earth keeps spinning. No problem there for 7 and 8. Now, here's where things get weird, because the next guy I'm going to name is somebody that, for most of these sharp, smart people who put together these teams, is an automatic stone. He's basically, if JT and Ben Griffin are locks, and they are, they're going to be on the team. Get your Ben Griffin jersey here. This guy is seen as a near lock, and I don't know if I can get there, and that's Colin Morikawa. Still one of the best iron players in the world. There's a chance that if you had me and Colin Morikawa, though, try to hit the same 15-foot putt right now, I might be better at it than him. That is only a slight exaggeration. His putter has been that terrible. Putting somewhat important in the Ryder Cup. I also have not, frankly, loved the Colin Morikawa attitude all year. He's done a bit of a mini heel turn here. He's done the, like, I don't have to tell you guys anything. You know, we do this, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's very combative with the media. Not that that should matter that much, but the vibes are terrible with the guy. And trying to pick a Ryder Cup team that's going to win is partly an exercise in vibes. It is. He's been on these. He knows the drill. He's a veteran. So you'd say, well, you've got to take the experienced player. Vibes suck with him. I don't know if I can pick him. Here is a guy, though, that this is going to be me talking out of both sides of my mouth. This guy gives off some of the worst, like, poutiest. You know how we think of all, like, you think of, like, the classic, like, 1970s snob country club stereotype, right? Like, not really like that anymore, but, like, the guy who nose up in the air. Patrick Cantlay kind of seems like that dude, right? I think somebody described him well once as saying, Patrick Cantlay looks like he just foreclosed on somebody's house and kicked them out into the street. Patrick Cantlay, though, was the only American with a pulse when they were in Rome. I'm putting him on the team. He's not exactly been in good form. This is kind of a double standard here with he and Morikawa. He hasn't been in good form. He can be absolutely kind of an attitude problem. But I think when it comes to the Ryder Cup, the fact that he just treats everything like it's ho-hum, it makes him a big game player, slow heartbeat guy. A Robert Horry type, if you want to use a cross-sport comparison. You want Patrick Cantlay in the foxhole with you in a Ryder Cup. He's not going to get too fired up in a good way from the home crowd. And if he hits a bad shot or two and some of those New York fans try to turn on him, he's not going to care about that either. I'm putting Cantlay on the team. I'm also putting Cam Young on the team because, and this is one of the other things you take into account when you're making one of these Ryder Cup rosters, if you're trying to fill in that back six. He's played some of his best golf, like, lately. And Cam Young is at it again, by the way, at the Tour Championship. He's right up there in the top five again. He might win the thing. His putter has come along. He hits the absolute unholy snot out of the golf ball. And it would, be something of a home game. His dad was the pro at Sleepy Hollow, which is a big-time country club up that way. In Westchester. Remember they said he was like from the, they tried to say he was from the Bronx or whatever a couple years ago during a major or something. And he was like, no, I'm from like Westchester County. Thanks. It's not quite the Bronx. Either way, Cam Young's on the team. That leaves me with two spots. I am not a believer that Keegan Bradley should be a playing captain for this thing. He's got vice captains. Jim Furyk's done this kind of thing a lot. So as a vice captain, he's about as good as you could possibly have. Jim Furyk has been in the big boy chair as a captain before, but Keegan Bradley won the Travelers and then has been a little bit stinky since then. Not a good enough reason. If he was like the seventh ranked player on this list and had just missed out on being an automatic pick, different conversation. And if he had been playing a lot better lately, different conversation. But he isn't doing those things. And therefore, I am not going to give Keegan Bradley the benefit of the doubt. Not that I think he's going to be some phenomenal captain and that playing would be a real detriment to him in like this tangible sense. I just don't have good vibes about it. I don't have a good feeling about it. So, no Keegan, no Colin in what is easily my most controversial pick, which means we got to fill it out with two more. You know who's on the team? Chris Goddard, who is playing a little bit better of late. You got to have one total wild card when you make one of these. Chris Goddard is mine. Dude went to Rutgers. Big, burly, Brooks Koepka kind of looks like he should be an athlete in another sport. Got insanely red hot over a three-week stretch about a month ago. Chris Goddard did. I'm putting him on the team as the 12th man. He might only play three sessions, but I feel like big, brawny-looking linebacker build type of guy playing in front of New York fans and just bombing the unholy hell out of the ball, that's a good pick for my team. And then I'm putting Sam Burns on there, actually, as my last pick. And I'm overlooking Maverick McNealy here. but I'm trying to build out a team that has a guy that does one thing phenomenally well. I don't know if there's a better putter on planet Earth than Sam Burns. And while Mav McNeely has been really good, it's kind of just a generalized really good. And so the controversy here will be that Sam Burns gets to jump on the team, even though I think most people felt like his best role was as Scottie Scheffler's buddy, and we already have a built-in Scottie Scheffler partner in Russell Henley. I'm bringing the Sam Burns hot putter to the team. I'm leaving Mav McNeely and Colin Morikawa off. This is absolutely not going to be the U.S. Ryder Cup team because at least two of my picks would be greeted with derision, but that's my group. Scheffler, Spawn, Shoffley, Henley, English, Bryson, JT, Ben Griffin, Sam Burns, Pat Cantlay, Cam Young, Chris Goddard. Will they win if that's the 12? Probably not. Was this a fun exercise for me? Yes, it was. Speaking of which, that brings us to the end of Going Low for the year. We got a lot of football ramping up here. So thanks to everybody that listened to Going Low this year. I enjoyed doing this coming in and working with Craig Mankins, of course. I gave him the day off today for the final show. Hope you guys enjoyed it as well. There will still be across X, formerly known as Twitter and Instagram, plenty of Going Low golf content going up because golf season itself hardly over. So make sure you stay tuned to the socials on Instagram and X, formerly known as Twitter, for a lot more Going Low content. Otherwise, I'll talk to you again probably next spring when the tour season really ramps up. So we'll do that in probably March. Till then, ta-ta. Panther Insider Show is next on The Fan.